Oxamoxwa with the Garcia Birthday Band on Friday, June 14th at 8 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Oxamoxwa is a 1969 album by the Grateful Dead. Fans and critics alike consider this era to be the band's experimental apex. The Garcia Birthday Band is a group of veteran musicians interpreting and celebrating the repertoire of the late Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. Again, that's the 50th anniversary of Oxamoxwa with the Garcia Birthday Band on Friday, June 14th at 8 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland State University, offering a master's degree in urban and regional planning for those who want to shape cities into inclusive, vibrant, and livable communities. More information online at www.planning@portlandstate.org.
Thank you. Listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring an uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not my fear.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Mike.
another edition of Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm one of your co-hosts. I'm Lisa Fay, and I'm here with,
and this is Ibrahim Mubarak, the co-host for Right to Survive Radio, where the uncomfortable is made comfortable. And today we're here with three wonderful guests that was part of Right to Dream, Right to Survive, and they lived in the street. And the title of our show is Adjustment Period. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and we're going to go more into this in a minute.
My name's Corey Elia. I'm a journalist here in town, photographer, videographer, documentarian. I've been covering the situation as a journalist for 2 years, and I myself was homeless from 2010-13. I've been housed now for about 6 years.
Hi, my name's Tricia Reed. I am currently unemployed, but was on the streets for 4.5 years, was a member of Right to Survive, Right to Dream 2 for 4 of those.
Hi, I'm Mike Summers. Basically, I'm the better half of this half over here. been homeless for about the same amount of time.
Yes. And when I say adjustment period, it's an adjustment period that people go through from living on the street to getting in house. Some people get comfortable with it. Some people still carry their habits with them from living on the street, and some people can't adjust properly and they rather go back to the street. And these three guests are going to comment on that. So if you want to call in and ask questions, it's 503-231-8187, and on with the show.
So let's start with another adjustment period before talking about getting housed. When you first lost your housing and went to the streets, what was it like?
Wow, that's a good question. It was very scary. I mean, you had no idea what was going to happen to you, what it was like or what it was going to be like out on the streets. It was just totally, totally scary.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of a shock. You know, it was something I'd never experienced in life, never sitting there trying to figure out resources or throughout the city that I could even tap into. I mean, it essentially just ended up me being on the bike trail there in Springwater Corridor setting up a tent because I didn't know what I could go and seek out, what the kind of help there was.
We were not in the least bit prepared. When we first became houseless, we did not even have a tent. We didn't have sleeping bags. We had nothing. And it was still cold. It was April, so it was still cold. It was rainy. And it was hard. I had been houseless before, but the last time I'd been houseless was a little different because we actually had a vehicle at the time, so we were staying in our car. This time, you know, like I said, we had nothing. We had no sleeping bag, no tents, and it was cold.
And I think that's no one is prepared to be houseless because going through school from kindergarten until whatever high level you reach, that they don't say when you become houseless, do this. They always say when you support the capitalism system. And with your money, with your education, renting, buying, or subleasing, and then when you become houseless, like a shock. What do I do now? Where's my shower? Where's my bathroom? Where's my kitchen to cook? Where's the bedroom? Oh my goodness, where are the children gonna sleep? You know, we did, and nobody's prepared. So, in become houseless, housing. How did you adjust to becoming houseless once you became houseless?
Well, it's hard to actually answer that question for me. it was really just a learning period, and it took months and months for me to figure out how to actually survive out there, being able to actually get something to eat, something, a shower, someplace I can actually trust that I can actually sneak a nap in, you know. You actually really become like a major survivalist once you're out there on the streets and you're actually trying to figure this stuff out.
I don't think I personally don't think I ever adjusted to it. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that, you know, even though you're not prepared for it, you just can't quite adjust to it, you know. Even for as long as we were homeless, it was just, you know, the adjustment was not there, you know, and I never got used to it.
We were actually fortunate enough that we ran into an individual that kind of showed us the ropes and helped us out with some tarps and a tent we were up by the
grotto.
The grotto.
You were outside.
The grotto.
Exactly. We were outside. We were by the grotto, and we ran into an individual who had been houseless for so long that he said he never wanted to go inside. So,
now you want to talk about a survivalist. That guy was it.
And so the question is that everybody, I guess it's a $1 million question or the age-old question, that once you lost your housing, how did family and friends treat you?
Non-existent. That's just basically didn't help. My brother did help just a couple of times, but other than that, he never helped. My dad never helped because I never asked him, because I know what, you know, I would have gotten if I had asked. So it was kind of like no family, no friends. One thing I can say that was very good was what we did meet a lot of really cool street people, mm-hmm. that helped along the way, and I think that's what made us get through it to the best we could.
Geez, I don't know.
For me, it was kind of interesting. Because I was born and raised here locally. When I became homeless, it kind of sooner after a few months, my rest of my family just stopped talking to me. But the only one that really kept trying to connect with me is my mom. You know, and she would constantly leave me like a drop spot somewhere throughout the city, usually at my grandparents' house, with like a little bit of cash, a pack of cigarettes if I needed to, when I'd talk to her last, you know. Other than that, you know, it's just being on the streets, you kind of sit there and you form your own family structure.
Right.
You kind of rely on the people around you, and the people that are in your community are your new family.
So I have one more question along these lines, and then we'll change topics. When you first came out on the streets, what were some of the things that you took with you that you found out the longer you are on the streets that they just were not practical?
A lot of things.
Yeah.
Essentially, if it was not on my person, like my clothing or my boots or my backpack, or could fit in my backpack, right, it was not going with me.
Or a rolling suitcase. We had a couple of rolling suitcases. But we found out now that the more you acquire, the more you have to take around with you. And we found it very hard to downsize or try and get rid of a lot of stuff because we were so dependent on the stuff we had.
That's one of the main issues I found, too, is, you know, because I would constantly have to try and lose that sentimental attachment to any item or mm-hmm. necessity of any kind of item. You know, I'd have to just be like, okay, well, is this even worth dragging around? Do I have the space in my bag or whatever I'm using to transport around my stuff? Do I really want it to end up being that I have a shopping cart filled to the brim? Do I really want it to sit there and be stuck in an encampment when really, when you're on the streets, it's almost easier to be moving around. But they, many, many people don't have that option due to, you know, physical issues and whatnot. It's difficult to sit there and be on the streets when you and try and hold on to your personal belongings. Yeah.
503-231-8187 is the call-in number if you want to ask any question or add any input on Right to Survive Radio and KBOO at 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And let's hear from a woman in the group's call. I know men and both and women go, they even though they houseless and even though they consider negativity in this country, they both go through different changes and different venues, and the situation affect them different. So, Trish, how did family or friends treat you once they found out you was houseless?
One time in particular, I actually called my mother because we were hungry, mm-hmm. and she said that she had to go play bingo and she couldn't help us because she was going to play bingo. So we went hungry. And luckily we had someone who told us about the soup kitchens downtown. So we never went hungry again after that. But, you know, it was just, I still to this day have not forgiven her for that. You know, it's 5 years later, or 6 years later now, and you know, that really hurt that my own mother would rather go play bingo than help her daughter get some food for the night.
And I know a little bit of your background story, Trish. What was the sentimental things that you took with you when you lost your housing that you realized weren't that important or were a struggle to hold on to once you had been out there for a while?
Pillows, things like that. You know, it's stuff you really can't be carrying around. Also, there was a lot of sentimental stuff that I had because the situation that caused us to be homeless, I was holding on to a lot of stuff from that. Mike's mom passed away, and that's what caused us to become homeless. And so I was holding on to a lot of that sentimental stuff of hers that probably shouldn't have had with me.
But you wouldn't notice never being houseless. And that's the same thing I did when I became houseless. I had a picture of my children, picture of my family. I had my all my degrees from high school through college. I had awards. I had my Social Security number, my Social Security card, my number, all these things, because you never, I mean, the concept of being house, oh, I'm going to go to a shelter, have a room by myself until I can get productive. But the shelter is, it's overcrowding on somebody's floor. Everybody's sleeping in a missionary position. And you're rolling over people's pews, stinky feet, yeah. Unwashed clothes. And, you know, some people don't do shelters well, so they go outside. And being houseless and living in shelter or living on the street is a different concept also.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't do the shelter myself. I tried a few times, and it's just a mess.
Well, we tried. I can't remember exactly how, but there were about a few months before we actually got inside that we were in a shelter. And that shelter experience gave us enough, just barely enough, I'll say, stability to where we could start looking for housing. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it was just, you know, just a minuscule amount of stability, but it was enough to get us to where we could say, all right, time to get up and start doing something. And that's how we managed to get inside.
See, one of my most cherished items I lost when I was on the streets was actually a leather belt I had that was my brother's. He passed away when I was 10 years old. And I believe it actually got taken during a sweep in like 2012 or something like that. I'd had that belt for over 10 years by at that point, and it was in some of my stuff. I was out at one of the resource centers grabbing lunch and trying to get a shower, and it's actually Clackamas Service Center. And yeah, by the time I came back to my camp, all my stuff was gone.
So how do that make you all feel? Because, you know, when I was able to keep my stuff with me, I had limited stuff that I, you know, brought. I knew I couldn't bring my clothes and stuff, but those sentimental things. And once you lose that, you can't get it back. And when the police swept us and took all of our stuff, this was before people started lobbying for houseless people. You didn't get it back. They just threw it away and told you to move on. Or even when they took you to jail, they took your IDs, your driver's license, and when you come out, you had to get new IDs and driver's license. So losing your sentimental back. First, you lose your housing. Then, for some reason, out of, I don't know, some warped mind, you lose the respect of family and friends. Mm-hmm. Then you lose your sentimental stuff. How do that make you feel? I mean, going through that, because this is all an adjustment period that you're not used to going through.
Yeah, what were some of the emotions that you experienced while you were...
For myself, I actually can honestly state that I ended up in a really depressed state of mind, you know? I mean, these are all things that hit you really hard emotionally, and yeah, I felt like I wasn't worthwhile anymore. Like there was nothing I could contribute to society, nothing, my opinion, anything. That, okay, so I'm unhoused, okay, there goes all my stuff, my family doesn't want to talk to me anymore. I felt like I was starting to lose my mind.
I totally agree with that. Absolutely agree with that. It's you know, you basically, you lose your self-respect. Once we got established up where we were camped, there were days I wouldn't go anywhere. I'd stay in the tent and I'd sleep all day just because that was my only escape from...
It was the only moment you felt comfortable.
Exactly.
That's about the same with me. I mean, I wasn't as bad, I don't think, depressed wise, because I was able to get up and do things. It was just when I wanted to, not when other people wanted to.
I'm not saying anything.
It was more I was trying to be, you know, be the drummer of my own drum, but somebody else was going, no, I want you to be my drummer. You know, so it was kind of like it hit me emotionally, but I don't think it hit me as hard as I think Trish did.
Yeah.
Once we got the Right to Survive, then it was why, or you know, our Right to Dream Too, was when things started to gradually, you know, come out of a little bit of depression.
I would like to state that was actually you being the rock in the situation and just trying to hold it together the both of you.
Yes. We got a caller online. Go ahead, call us. State your name and question or insight. Caller?
Oh, we lost the caller.
We lost a caller. Can you call back? Thank you, Mark.
Technical difficulties beyond our control.
So anyway, when I lost all my stuff, I figured it was a sign for me to put that life away and start living a new life. And I know it's an adjustment period that people, the first 30 days of becoming houseless, you're going to get mental, you're going to develop some trauma impact or mental issues, and you're going to either social service hop, which means lines and lines and lines for years and years. You're going to become dormant or depressed, or you're going to get up and do something about it. Caller, are you back now? State your name and your
question.
And question. Do we have a caller on? I guess the caller hung up again. Okay, so call in at 503-231-8187 for Roger Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial.
And I don't know if we're still having technical difficulties. Maybe we could have a music break.
Yeah.
And then again, maybe not. So.
I'd like to add one more thing, you know. Yeah. As far as friends, there was one friend that both me and Trish had that was gracious enough to store a lot of our personal stuff, our sentimental stuff, in his garage until we got housing. Mm-hmm. And he was the only friend / friend family that really, you know, cared enough to let us store, and for the duration of time that we were virtually homeless. So he had our stuff in his garage for about 3.5 years.
4.5.
Well, whatever.
4.5.
That's a friend.
That's admirable.
That's a friend right there.
See, but I lost everything where when I tell people, I'm rather from four. Okay, caller, are you here now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Yay. Hey, listen, this is Laura Moulton calling from Street Books, and we've been running a street library for people outdoors for the last 9 years. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to thank you for this conversation, and I wanted to just say that what we've seen in 9 years on the streets is a bunch of people so resilient with pretty much zero belongings. And so your conversation about people learning to live with nothing after things are stolen or after they have to give things up with a house really resonates with me. And I wanted to thank you for the conversation and remind people that we're out there on the streets for now running library shifts. So
thank you. And you Street Books, and you help them to keep up on their reading and stuff, where even if you lose your library card, and it's a hard time with houseless people going into the library also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no, we don't have ID proof, nothing like that. We don't have any fees or fines, and we invite people to return books, but we also let them know that it's okay to pass them on to people who would like to read them. So we have a sort of share economy. And we appreciate our patrons so much. People have a lot on their plate, a lot at stake. And when they still come back for books, we know, you know, that
could you state where you at and where people can donate books that they read and want to share with people so they can bring them to you or drop them off?
Yeah, so we have a headquarters in Southeast in the St. Francis Park Apartments, and that's on Southeast Stark and 11th Street. We have hours. You can email. Actually, you can go to streetbooks.org and drop us a note if you want to come with books. But we also always take books out on the street if people can find us there. And we have shifts that just started this week, 4 days a week in different places. So those are also on our website. But it's outside Sisters of the Road at Northwest 6th and Davis. It's at the Workers Center on MLK and Davis on the northeast side. Bunches of different places, so it's worth checking out the website. But we'll also post it around at our various locations for people, too.
Thank you once again for saying that. And we are happy, and we have some comments from the crew here that want to talk about street books or whatever. So
awesome.
So
thank you so much. I'll hang up now.
You can stay on.
Stay on. Actually, I wanted to talk to you guys actually about a few things. So I believe
she's off the line.
That's okay.
So yeah, actually, I ran into Street Books when they were at the Portland Book Festival just this last year, and I believe they're just setting up over there at Clackamas Service Center, and I've been hearing great things about them. You know, people are really happy that they have a source for books. I mean, when you're out there on the streets, it's pretty much all you have. You don't really have the option to listen to, or, well, you do have the option of listening to radio, but oftentimes you don't have the electricity to do so unless you're running off a battery-powered radio. You don't really have the option of TV. Books were my main source of entertainment when I was on the streets.
Well, we remember Laura, because she, when we were at Ride to Dream 2, she set up one of her mobile book carts right there, right at the entrance. And I don't know if she remembers us, but we sure remember her because her books were a godsend. Mm-hmm. Keeping us pretty much sane.
So we have two of our guests that came late, and that's Joseph Yarbrough. Am I pronouncing it right? Okay, and we talking about the adjustment from housing to the streets. And then our second half, what we do in about 5 minutes, we're going to talk about adjusting from the streets to housing. So the question was, how did you feel when you first, what happened when you first became houseless?
When I first became houseless, it was after a divorce, and I had no idea what I was getting into. I let people use my card, I trusted people, and I lent people money, and I let them use my phone. And slowly I was losing things and didn't know where they were going because these people seemed really nice. And then I found out that I had to put on the poker face, become like aggressive, use a lot of profanity. And I was going into situations that were very, very violent and crazy, and I had to pretend like that happened to me every day, because if it wasn't, I would have become the victim. And it pretty much like I had to go into a cave and pretend to be this person just to survive every day.
And so in doing that, how did your family, when you was housed, you had families and friends. I know y'all came over, y'all had barbecue, you drunk beer or had dances and stuff. But once you became houseless, how did those same people treat you?
I moved from my area where I had friends and stuff. I ended up sharing my addiction with one of my friends. I ran up a phone bill and then proceeded to go into, after the relationship was finalized where it was not going to be repaired, I ended up going down to Portland from Seattle and bouncing back and forth, and I stayed completely away from my family. Never made phone calls, never made contact, never borrowed money. I just disappeared, and I thought it was the best way from my children and from my family.
And now we heard that, and we heard from Mike and Trish, and we heard from Corey. We're going to go to a musical break and talk. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the adjustment from streets to housing. Because you lose friends when you get housed also. So no matter what you do, I can't say word. Good if you do and good if you don't, right? You're going to lose somebody. So now can we go to our musical break? 503-231-8187. It's a call-in number, so you have any comment or questions you want to ask our guest today, please call in.
Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Our guests are shaking hands and getting acquainted here in studio, which is great. I love it. We have been talking for the last half hour about the adjustment period from being indoors and housed to losing your housing and becoming houseless. Now we're going to switch gears and talk about the adjustment period going back indoors once you transition from the streets or a shelter into housing. Mike, you want to go first?
Well, it definitely was a definite adjustment, especially the first few months, because you're so caught up. I think you're so caught up in the houseless mentality that it took a while to break that mentality of being houseless when you move into your apartment. And it was like every day, you know, you go to the mailbox or you look out and see if there was a notice on your door. And if there was a notice on your door, whether it was an eviction notice or not. And that's like, and even if there was a note on the door saying, oh, well, we need 24 access to your, because of plumbing or electrical or whatever, and you're just naturally think eviction.
Because you get those notices when the police post up. It's going to be a suite.
You go.
That
there
same
you go.
Traumatic experience.
That's right.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Caller, can you state your name and your purpose?
Yes, my name is Arthur.
Hey, Arthur.
Hey, how you feeling today?
Hot. Okay, good question.
I think we're all in the same boat in that one.
Yeah.
Well, listen, real quick, I'm not going to take your airtime or waste your listeners' airtime. But I've got a degree in mathematics, and I'm an Oregon-licensed math teacher, right?
Yes.
But, you know, I fell prey to those addictions. You know, you're talking about them, right?
Yeah.
And within months, weeks and months, quickly, I went from living to paying an overpriced apartment, which is way overpriced in Portland, right, to living in a tent. Listen, to living in a tent for months, and then these alcoholics walking around the street at night would be trying to steal your things, you know?
Were they housed? Of course.
You know, instead of having an addiction where, like, you just keep it to yourself, some of these alcoholics would be walking up and down the street to a club.
Yes.
The club alcoholic, you know, not the tent alcoholic, but
yes.
And these people would be taking my personal property, which was my house was my tent, right?
Yeah.
And they'd be walking by it, shaking my tent at night, essentially, you know, not messing with me, you know? So it's, I think a lot of the people listening on the radio, they're not aware that a lot of people, the major danger from living in the street is actually unkind individuals that steal your things and, you mentioned it before.
Yes.
But that steal the things and literally... it's not as much the police as it is to the my fellow man that's causing my misery.
Exactly.
That's not cool. That's right. Just not cool.
And I think we all went through that before, Arthur. And we appreciate your comment. And we glad that you're making that public so everybody won't think it's just me crying in the wilderness. They doing this stuff. They doing that. So we have a multitude of people saying the same thing. And hopefully we can collaborate together and rather together and we can change this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope that people try to be kinder to each other in the future.
Inshallah. You know?
All right. That's all I'm going to say. I got to go.
All right. Thank you much.
Thank you, Arthur. Trish, how was it for you, adjusting?
Back into housing.
Well, like Mike said, it was, you know, every time that notice came on the door, oh my gosh, are we getting evicted? Or somebody's knocking on the door, well, who's this? I don't know anybody here. You know, and you get in that street mentality of, you know, somebody's knocking on your door.
It's negative stuff.
Exactly. It's negative. It's negative. Absolutely. Absolutely.
They didn't bake cookies to bring over from next door, did they?
No.
Andy and Mayberry, welcome to the neighborhood.
Well, that's... So for me, it was kind of odd for me, because when I got housed, it was actually because my grandfather needed a caretaker in home. He actually lives in a rather nice house over in Selwood. So I went from a tent straight into there and became his caretaker, you know. I was used to sleeping in on the bike trail, usually fully clothed. I would constantly fall asleep in just my boots and sweatshirt and bowl pants right as I got back from, you know, going to school to take care of Grandpa and just fall asleep like that. When I was out on the trail, like the caller Arthur was saying, I used to get harassed quite often, you know, and I kind of got used to falling asleep with a miniature baseball bat under my pillow. And even to this day, I still have it near my pillow.
True. I have my knife, and I sleep in my hat. I still do.
So,
what,
yeah.
What about you, Joseph?
I ended up going to a treatment center, and for the first week, I slept on the floor because the bed was so uncomfortable. Then I got moved into housing, and it was a wonderful place with a door that shut, but I also was paranoid when people knocked or the slip was on the door, eviction. And then I learned how to take off like two pairs of jeans and shoes and a hoodie and stuff that I slept in like every day. And I wouldn't bathe. I wouldn't take care of myself. I would eat, and I would just like, you know, I'd look out the window all day trying to stop from being drawn into the streets. But I never changed my clothes. I never showered, never brushed my teeth or anything. It just wasn't what I did.
Can I chime in there? Because, yes, I want to agree with the whole shower thing, too, because I got used to going, like, a week and a half without a shower. And when I got indoors, it took me months to sit there and be like, okay, I need a shower every other day or 2 days. And then finally getting it down to, like, a shower every morning was so difficult for me to actually mentally get there. Just, like, daily bathing just before I leave or as soon as I get back from school, you know.
Yeah, I still did bird bath in the sink.
We have another caller on the line. Caller, where's your name and where's your question?
I'm Ben Hodgson, and I don't have a question. I have statements.
Well, oh, okay.
State it.
I lived out there for 3.5 years, and don't I just relate to everything I'm hearing on this show?
Thank you.
Depression is a killer.
Yes, it is.
I was so beat up that for 2 years I couldn't even manage to scrape myself off the sidewalk. Took still another year and a half after that before I made it back indoors. And you guys got any questions? By the way, now I am with Street Books.
Okay.
You
want to
find
nice,
us around town? Ask around. You know.
Well, I just want to say, man, that's great that you've actually, you know, gotten off the streets. And this is amazing.
But what about the people who are on the street for 10, 11, 25 years? You know, how do they adjust? And so the question that we've been trying to find out is that when you become houseless, everybody, everything that you know, ever knew, or dreamed about having just poof up in smoke and vapor. So what about when you get housed, how do family and friends treat you? Or do you consider meeting new family?
I got two things to say then. Sorry to interrupt, but I got two things to say. Number one, don't give up. You keep working, it'll get better. I heard some guy say, man, you lay down, you give up, it's all over. You know, actually, it's not all over. You just wish it was. But when you do get back inside, I told myself I was smart. Give myself at least 2 months just to get over the shock.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. And it hit me real hard. And, yeah, I heard this, too. You really can't bring your friends back to your apartment with you. You know, people want to be loyal to their friends, but it's just not going to work.
Okay,
I can tell you a really funny story about that.
Well, thank you much, caller.
I did try to bring all this.
Yeah, so we're going to go to our guests here and see what they what their comments are.
Okay, nice talking to you.
Yeah. Your question is, once you got how we got another caller, okay? Come on in, caller. State your name and ask a question or make a statement.
Hi, my name is My name is William Daniels, and I'd like to make a statement.
Yes, William.
Ibrahim, hello. First of all.
Hello.
I have noticed over the years when I watch the local TV stations, when they give reports on issues regarding houselessness and folks who are living on the street in either tents or on the trail or in motorhomes, there's not a lot of understanding or compassion. And I would love to see a video actually done by folks who have the experience, like you folks. If you could do an educational video that really points out the trauma and around the individual issues, like where do I put my ID so it doesn't get stolen when I'm trying to take a shower? Where do I go to the bathroom, etc. And then also the post houselessness issue, which you folks are not talking about. I think a real high quality educational video, it doesn't have to be expensive, but one that really points out the trauma and the difficulty both during the issue and post, I think would go a long way to educate the public. People simply don't get it, that it's more than just not having a roof over one's head. There's a whole huge raft of other issues that go along with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll be covering that on Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. So keep listening and keep sending in suggestions and topics, and we'll have that on our radio show. We've been doing this for 10 years, the only houseless radio show in the nation. Okay.
Exactly. Thanks. And it should be gotten out to the news media.
Well, you know, they want to support capitalism, the mainstream. So back to the guest. We thank you for calling in and having that comment. So back to the guest. Thank you very much. Now you lost your family and your friends, house family friend. Now you house again. How does your street family and friends treat you?
My street family and friends, I kind of ignored them. I'd say hello. But if I knew that if I got too close, I would get in there because that camaraderie and that your name being said and the pickup off the ground, be like, hey, brother, all that stuff. But the main thing I had to deal with was my mental health. I had to learn to take my medication on time and do the right thing and eat healthy and stuff. But it's like my friends on the streets, they were angry with me. But then after years and years, they realized that I was walking away because I had to.
Okay, so with me... I actually, when I got back housed, it was really sudden. Like I was saying, you know, Grandpa just needed an in-home caretaker, and it was essentially within days that I was off the trail and in-house, and complete world shift, upside down. I kind of grew detached because I had grown really attached to my family out there on the streets. A lot of the people that I really cared for were still out there. After only a few years, I was like sitting there, I was... again, still depressed, even though I was housed, you know, because I didn't have the friends that I just did. And I actually ended up going back and volunteering at Clackamas Service Center, where I used to go get dinner and be able to get clothing, shower, whatnot, whenever I needed to, and where most of my family that were on the streets were still going around too. And I'm still to this day, every once in a while, going up there and volunteering.
I actually very much isolated myself from the houseless family that I had, just so I could adjust properly, because I knew that part of my life was something that I needed to kind of let go of. Or I wasn't going to make it inside.
Well, I'll come back, kind of going back, you know, to, you know, friends and family treat. I found that the friends we made or our street family treated us one heck of a lot better than friends or family did before we were houseless. So, because I think there's a shared, I don't know how to say it really, a shared
understanding,
right, of what each one of us are going through. And the empathy is just so there for that because They've gone through the same things that you've gone through.
And that's an interesting thing, what you said, Mike, because I often tell people when someone is housed, they live in a community. Either it's all white, all black, all Hispanic, all Native American, all racist, all sexist, all everything. Mm-hmm. And then when you come to the streets, you got everything there.
It's all commingled.
And so, does that exist in the houseless community?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'd like to say that it's more so in the houseless community because at that point you don't have walls separating yourself from your neighbor. You can't just look away to blind eye to whatever issue there might be there. I mean, you're interacting with everybody, no matter who they are.
So does that dynamic change? Because when I was out there, I'm black, Muslim, houseless. You know, at first people were standoffish. At first people would call me the N-word. At first they go, a man in a dress, which I still get teased. That's okay. And, you
know, it's a nice costume you're wearing.
And then when they found out I was there, that I was pulling myself up and helping them, those stereotypes, those things disappear, and even at these tiny house villages, we living with differences, and we becoming friends, you know. We putting beside us the color of our skin, our ethnicity, our gender. But then when you go back in house, how is that?
Well, I mean, when you get back in house, you're kind of sitting there, you have the option of just being able to ignore it. I mean, when you're out on the streets, you don't really have that luxury. Right. I mean...
Well, I think, let me take that one step further. You have the choice to ignore it. Now, whether you do or not, that's another story altogether.
Yes.
And so with that another story altogether, now you find... I know we got to move on. Now you find yourself housed. Your old family and your old friends come around and congratulate you, and do they hang out with you? Do they help you do things?
Yes, because I'm in recovery, and some of the harder core people that I thought disappeared went to prison, they're in recovery, and those people I can completely relate with, and I trust them in my home, and they trust me in their homes, and so I know three or four people, and I live with one that's been homeless for 20, 30 years.
Yeah. And so how do your brothers, your sister, your mother, your father, your aunts, uncle, grandma, you know, Your blood family treat you now?
Well, since I got housed and I was grandpa's caretaker, he actually has passed. And so it's my mom that now owns that house, and she's quite proud of me. I've been working really hard at PSU and trying to apply myself journalistically to try and give some voice to the houseless of this city, you know, try and point to the issues. And she always told me as a kid, always punch up, you know.
I would say that as far as me personally, a lot of my family and a lot of my friends from the back when I was housed before I became houseless have kind of cut me off. And you know what I say about that? It's okay, because if they didn't care enough to stay in contact with me, then I don't need you in my life anyway.
Quick, rapid-fire questions. First thing you ate when you got inside?
Tacos.
Bacon cheeseburger and chocolate milkshake.
I don't remember.
Chicken fried steak.
Oh, that's right.
She does.
Oh, the first thing I ate.
I think we have a winner.
A bowl of grits, scrambled eggs, and turkey bacon.
Oh, he went grocery shopping, didn't he?
In the houseless community, that's gourmet.
Yeah, that's right.
So my family and friend, they congratulate me, but they still, I don't trust you, because I know my cousin, he would come get me where I can make money, like mow his lawn or, you know, help him build something. And I go use the restroom. He'll walk to the restroom with me and stand by the door. And I said, man, if I wanted to do something, you wouldn't know it. You know? So it's a trust issue that your blood family, you know, have with you from living out on the street, because they still in that stereotypical mood. Have y'all ran across any of that?
Well, I can honestly, with my brother, you know, my brother has kind of two-faced me on that. You know, he's going, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. And then when I do that, and when I did that, it was like, oh, nice job. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I don't, you know, I want to keep my apartment just to be able to look my brother and my dad in the eye and say, I got this. This is, I have this. I'm going to keep this. It's mine.
Right.
Like I said earlier, I hid from my family. I didn't want them to see me where I was. So when I did approach them, they were like, Uncle Joe, where have you been? Uncle Joe, man, Uncle Joe. And I tell my sister, remember that thing? Remember this? And she's like, shut up. She goes, that's the past, man. Get over it. Walk away from it. It's the past. You've changed. You're not that person anymore. And then I started realizing when I heard it 3-4 times from my sisters and my nephews and nieces, I'm not that guy no more. I don't have to hide anymore. I can be a present, you know?
This is a strong topic, and perhaps we can have you come back to the show and talk more about adjusting to the streets and from the streets. We got one more minute, and any last quick words that you want the listening audience to know about adjustment?
If you are out there, keep your head up. It is hard out there on the streets, but there are people out there who do genuinely care. Just keep that in mind.
And keep hope alive.
And take no for no. Don't take no for an answer. Keep working hard.
Choices.
Your choices, yeah. And those are choices where you know people is out there cold and in the rain, and you want them to have them come into your house. But then the choice to have them do that, because so many people lose their housing, and people going to say, oh, you better than us now. Like Joseph said, choices is king. You have to make positive choices.
And as for house people, remember, be kind to people on the street. After listening to our show today, I hope we provide some greater insight to how people who have lived